It has been said that the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King carried three books with him everywhere: a Bible, a copy of the U.S. Constitution, and a copy of Howard Thurman's Jesus and the Disinherited. Now, how many of you know about the Reverend Dr. Howard Thurman? Has anybody heard of him? A couple people, right? Maybe a couple people. Howard Thurman was an African-American author, philosopher, theologian, educator, and civil rights leader. One of the most prominent people of the 20th century. He had been a classmate and friend of Martin Luther King's father at Morehouse College. And Morehouse College was established just after the Civil War as a theological school for African-American men. Now, when Martin was a student at Boston University getting his PhD, he visited Thurman, and Howard Thurman subsequently tutored Martin Luther King and became his spiritual advisor. Howard Thurman went on to serve on the faculty of Howard University School of Divinity and preached and taught a gospel of nonviolence, which he learned from Gandhi. In 1944, Howard Thurman started the Church of the Fellowship of All People in San Francisco with a white minister, Dr. Alfred Fisk. And it was the first intentionally multicultural congregation, or multiracial, I would say, congregation in the nation, 1944. Now, in our culture that is enchanted with heroes, Dr. Martin Luther King, by far the most powerful prophet this nation has ever known, by far the one who came to teach us to live into our highest ideals as a nation, by far a man who challenged the moral ineptitude of this nation head on. In this culture, he is a household name. We even have a date every year to make sure that we don't forget him. But none of us, not even our most venerated prophets, reaches our potential by ourselves. Martin Luther King was preceded at the Dexter Avenue Baptist Church by the Reverend Vernon Johns. Anybody heard of Vernon Johns? Another fascinating character. Vernon Johns was a black preacher who persevered through incredible discrimination to take his seat. Originally, he just started to take his seat at Oberlin College. So he was a Virginia boy. And in Virginia, black youth only went to school about 4 months a year because the rest of the time they were picking cotton or picking tobacco. But Vernon Johns really wanted to go to Oberlin College, so he wrote his application and he sent it on out to Oberlin College in Ohio, and then he packed his bags and he went to Oberlin College so he could talk to the dean face to face about whether he would be accepted at Oberlin College or not. And it said that the dean told him, "We'd let you in, but you don't have enough credits," because he was picking cotton. And Vernon Johns said, "Do you want brains or do you want credits? Because I have brains." And he went, in this story that I heard, he went and he pulled the book. The dean of the college said, "Vernon, you got to be able to speak Greek to come to this college." And Vernon went to the bookshelf and pulled out a Greek book and started to read it. And he got himself into Oberlin College. And when he came out of Oberlin College, he found himself at the Dexter Avenue Baptist Church in Montgomery, Alabama. In 1941, he started preaching about racial justice. A sermon called, "Is Heaven Segregated?" And another one called, "Is It Legal to Lynch Negroes in Alabama?" in the 1940s. So the Montgomery police did not really like Vernon Johns too much, and they threatened him, and finally they pushed him out of town. And so the deacons of the Dexter Avenue Baptist Church, they thought they'd call a preacher who might be a little more wet behind the ears, hopefully a little less radical, And they heard of this man called Martin Luther King just out of Boston University. And the rest, as we say, is history. But it is in these lesser known stories that we see how the path is cleared from generation to generation to make a new way. Now, Howard Thurman, I also learned, was inspired by the work of a woman named Olive Schreiner, and he edited her writings. Olive Schreiner was a South African, and she was a feminist and an anti-apartheid activist before anybody knew what those words meant. Herman tells this story about Olive Schreiner. He says that when Olive was a child, she loved looking in nature. She loved nature, and she would observe nature and then peel out and help her understand the workings of the universe, including the workings of human nature. Rather Unitarian Universalist of her, if you ask me. And one day, Olive was noticing that these locusts, one locust was making a trail to a little creek bed, and got to the edge of the trail and couldn't figure out kind of how to get over that creek and just ended up down the river. And another one went and kind of ended up down the river. But pretty soon they'd carved a path so that more of them could come together. And when the locusts all came together, they could create a bridge together to cross that river. They created a bridge to cross that river. There are always those who make a track to the river's edge, allowing others to make it to the other side. There are always those making tracks, allowing the next generation to do the thing that needs to be done in their time. Martin Luther King had Vernon Johns and Howard Thurman, among countless others. Howard Thurman looked to Gandhi and Olive Schreiner, among countless others. There's always someone who goes before and opens a door. And therefore, it is our responsibility to be opening the doors for those who will come after us. Now, I heard these stories while I was at a UU clergy seminar last month called the Unitarian Universalist Ministers Association, called UUMA, Institute on Excellence in Ministry. It's quite an ominous name. Personally, I always shrink when I, think about excellence in ministry. But these collegial gatherings, they happen every 2 to 3 years, in addition to our yearly gatherings at the UU General Assembly. And these gatherings are like my congregation in some ways, where I get to sit in the pews and be nourished and fed in a different way than I do when I'm amongst you. And I also get to serve, to be a small part of something larger than myself that helps bring my values further into the world. So this was the second time I was at the Institute since I served on the UUMA board, and I was off the UUMA board in 2013. But this year felt really different to me. I'm kind of a mid-career minister now, 17 years since my ordination, and I can imagine about that many more of active ministry moving forward, so I'm kind of smack in the middle here. And I more fully, this time than any other time, saw my arc in this tradition. I noticed how my mentors, who've either retired or are close to retirement, were not among us at this gathering. And instead, I was the one having those conversations about how to minister with a young family, or what to do in your first couple years in a new congregation. I began to see this trajectory. And I saw how issues that were talked about when I was on the UUMA board, issues like sexual misconduct and multicultural competency, they're in a new place now, with new controversies and new questions that this batch of new denominational leaders is moving forward. It was poignant and very beautiful. I'm not done serving our denomination, I'm sure about that. But in this interim period where I am more focused locally, it was beautiful to see the bridges being built where my colleagues and I had only made it to the shoreline. And then while I was there, I thought about all of you here and how many of you are long-haul people. And you know I consider myself the luckiest minister in the country, right? And that's because of you. I like brag about you guys all the time. So many of you have entered into significant leadership and then stuck around afterwards to watch it get carried over and carried forward. So many of you pay your pledges on time and in full, even when the music's modern. Support each canvas, even when I go on too long. Mow the lawn and scare off the prairie dogs. And open and close the building, even if it means you're here till 2 o'clock in the afternoon. I see you doing this work, and it's beautiful and poignant as you are part of creating something larger than any of us could do alone. So many of you are dedicated behind the scenes people, quietly doing the prophetic work, and yes, there is such a thing as quiet prophetic work. You're tending to the spiritual care of this congregation through covenant group leaders or the Neighborhood Connector programs, and now our lay pastoral care program. You're gathering people together for yoga, poetry, or meditation, or to learn nonviolent communication skills. There are people in this room, I bet, who wrote the bylaws in 1979, and people in this room who revised them just a few years ago. There are people in this room who started the covenant groups in 2005, and people who are leading them now. People who are on the Social Concerns Committee at the Masonic Temple, and those of you who just newly reconstituted our Social Justice Council. People who worked with the Salvadoran refugees in the 1980s, and those of you working on sanctuary now. Each of you, no matter how little you think you contribute, is part of charting the course of this fellowship by your very presence here and now. Now, you may be thinking of people you would consider long-haul people in this congregation. Maybe some of those names have trickled up in your mind over the course of me talking about this. I'm going to invite you to take some time to thank them today, maybe doing coffee hour another time, or surprise them with a little note in the mail. Because sometimes we can't see how we are making a difference. It is poignant and beautiful to experience the generations of congregational leadership here and how we shift over time. Each set of leaders and congregants seeking to understand what is ours to do in this moment of time to most fully build this community of inner depth and outer focus. And as much as it is important to gather to support one another, these times desperately need us to persevere and to sustain our moral courage as we face unethical political power led by corporate and lobby interests that is dividing this country and oppressing the already marginalized. We know that. Our leadership, our walking towards the edge of that river to build the caring structures of this congregation is important. And our leadership walking to the edge of that river to create the changes that are needed in this world is vitally important. We don't need another mass shooting to remind us of this. We need long-haul people out in our world, dedicated people who will stay the course to build a stronger social movement that will curb gun violence and teach us to care for our mentally ill people. So as we gather in gratitude for this beloved community, as we gather for comfort and solace, for us to have the courage to go forth in love and perseverance, may we each do what we can to build a more just and compassionate world. May this be our promise and our prayer.